The session you are sitting on is Omeka, using Web 2.0 technologies to enhance digital content. A little bit of background about Omeka, open source exhibit and collection building tool coming out of the Center for History and New Media. Really taking advantage of some Web 2.0 technologies, some advancements, and really empowering content managers, curators, archivists to describe and allow for the delivery of their own content. They are the masters of their content on the web, finally. So we've got a couple of speakers here, and we're going to do it in the order as you see on the screen. The first is Sharon Leon, Director of Public Projects from George Mason University, and more specifically the Center for History and New Media. You may know them for Zotero and some of the other tools that they've put out for us, very popular, very well received. She'll be discussing community collaboration and collections, an introduction to Omeka and Web 2.0 for archives. The second speaker, Robert or Bob Horton, depending on if it's official or not, from the Minnesota Historical Society, where he's the Director of Library Publications and Collections, will be talking about using Omeka. Practical implementations, multiple purposes, and multiple audiences. So what we'll try to do is have about 15 to 20 minutes for each speaker for the official portion of this presentation. And then what we're hoping in this very crowded and soon to be very warm room, and I've got my Southern seersucker on, so I'm okay, but the rest of you guys, is then open it up for discussion. We'd like to hear what you think. We'd like to hear what you know, what you don't know, where we can fill in the gaps on Omeka future development. Obviously, you've got the attention of someone from the Center for History and New Media, an opportunity to have sort of an open discussion of where this thing's going and how it can be best used in your archival practice. So without saying much more, if we can get Sharon up here to give us a rundown.
Thank you, Jason. I'm shocked and pleased at how crowded this room is. This is my first visit to the Society of American Archivists, and I thank you for allowing me and Omeka to come. I'm going to try and do a very brief sort of overview of Omeka itself, but first I need to start at the Center for History and New Media, which is where I work. Some of you may know the center, as Jason said, from Zotero, but it might help you to know how we got to Omeka by looking at the three divisions that the center is composed of. Our earliest projects were, for the most part, teaching and learning projects, curriculum projects designed to teach historical thinking skills, the earliest of which is a site called History Matters, which, if any of you have U.S. history undergraduates out and around in the world or were at one time a U.S. history undergraduate yourself, you may have encountered History Matters. The Research and Tools Division is the division out of which Zotero comes. This is our effort to build digital tools for historians and folks who deal with history that really work with born digital material. And Omeka is in part out of the Research Division. But I'm head of the Public Projects Division, which, if we take a look here, deals with most of our joint projects on collecting and exhibiting digital material on the web. And so Omeka is really a joint project of the Research Division and the Public Projects Division. And it came out of our understanding after many, many years of collaboration that museums and libraries and archives didn't have a good, quick, standards-based way to publish material on the web. And so we decided that over and over and over again, we found ourselves building the same system for each and every collaboration that we had. We built a database interface and a back-end UI and then tried to build a standards-based web front for it. And we figured out that there were an awful lot of people out there in the world who probably would like to have this little package of system that we were building for ourselves. And so we contacted Bob, who we had been wanting to collaborate with for a long time, and asked him if perhaps if we built this thing and got some money to build this thing, if he could help us find some folks to test it. And Bob has been great in doing that with his network in the upper Midwest. So Omeka, what is Omeka? Omeka is an open source, well, Omeka is a Swahili word that means to unfurl or display. And that's exactly what our main goal for Omeka was. We didn't want to build a collections management system because we know there are lots and lots and lots of good collections management systems out there. What we wanted to do was build a publishing front end for Omeka. We basically wanted to build WordPress for exhibits, WordPress for museums and archives. And so that is how we think of Omeka. It is open source in technology. It runs on a LAMP server, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. It allows you to switch the front end in and out, design themes just like WordPress. Anybody who has a WordPress designer has somebody who can design for Omeka. And then to add to the core functionality of the software with plugins. It's built on a Dublin Core metadata structure, which to librarians and archivists may not seem super robust, but certainly for web publication, it's more than enough. And it's 508 and W3C compliant, so all of those things are good. I thought what I would do is show you a little bit around the back end of Omeka. This is the administrative interface for Omeka. If you're familiar with WordPress, it probably looks fairly familiar. The structure of Omeka is built on the notion of items that are in collections in a large archive. And so if you were to add an item to the Omeka system, the first thing you would do would be to populate the Dublin Core metadata fields that accompany the item. And you can see here, standard fields, you have the ability to add more than one title, more than one subject, more than one of any of those standard Dublin Core fields, and you can call any of those to a front-end display. And you have the choice of using HTML in those fields or not. Then there is the additional item type metadata field, and we have a stock set of item types which you can use or replace. And those have additional fields. Then you would select a collection for the item. And finally, upload a file off of a local system into your main server system. And then certainly you on the administrative side can add tags to each item. So the stock set of items we have should look fairly familiar to you. There are lots of Dublin Core item types, document, moving image, oral history is one that we added. Sound, still image, website, event, email, person, place, those sorts of things. And as I said, these are the ones that it comes with, but you can certainly add your own and add additional metadata. You can also add additional metadata fields to each of those items. Then we hope that once you've populated an archive of items and collections that you want to build exhibits out of them, because this is what Omeka is for. It's for building exhibits. Though we use it in lots of ways to just display an entire archive, exhibits are really what it's about. And exhibit building is not a particularly hard task in Omeka, and that's exactly the point. We want historians, archivists, curators to be able to do this without a lot of technical knowledge. And so what happens is that you open a new exhibit, you add some exhibit metadata, so the title, the slug, the credits, the description, those sorts of things. You decide whether or not it's featured or not, whether or not you're ready to make it public, so you can build an entire exhibit on the back end and have it only visible to logged in administrative users before you send it out in the world. Then just like on the front end, you can select a theme for the exhibit. That means that the exhibits don't have to match the theme for the main site. You can have a completely different theme for each individual exhibit. So you could build a large archive of material on the web and build very different looking individual exhibits out of it. As the archive is based on items in collections, the exhibits are based on sections and pages. And so the basic practice is to add a section. Again, more metadata, section description, URL, slug, those sorts of things, and then add individual pages to that section. For each of the pages, you then add a title, and you can select a layout. Omeka ships with 12 standard layouts. They look like they're pretty flexible. They may, you know, do what you need them to do, but you can certainly scrap them and add new ones. Again, it's a practice that is designing layouts and themes for Omeka is really not much harder than tweaking WordPress themes. Yes?
I have a question. You keep using the term items and collections interchangeably.
No, and not interchangeably.
Museums and archives both are quite different.
Right. No, I'm not using them interchangeably at all. I keep saying items in collections. Items in the archive, there are lots of items in the archive. An item can exist in only one collection at a time, but may be used in any number of exhibits. You may choose to have collections, you may not. The collections portion of Omeka is particularly useful to museum folks, but may or may not be to users in the history world or other types of things. But because it's a legacy of receiving collections, acquisition of collections, items may only exist in one collection at a time. So there are 12 standard layouts, and you may design your own to add to or replace these layouts. Once you've selected a layout for a page, it's just as simple as dragging and dropping items from the archives into the slots on the page. And then the major addition for Omeka to the world of easy web publishing is that you can then add additional narrative text in these slots here. You can just sort of, it's not quite dark enough to see in the layout thumbnail that there's a text field in the layout. We really think that this is the key feature of Omeka because in lots of ways and places there have been the ability for institutions to display the items in their collections. But we thought, and we're pretty sure what was lacking was the ability for folks to add expertise to the metadata that surrounds those items. And so the idea here is that someone in your institution, a curator, an archivist, a historian, can create a narrative exhibit that includes all of that expert content in addition to the items in your collections and archives. So one of the very first sites that we built using Omeka was a partnership with the National Park Service, a site called Gulag Many Days, Many Lives. And this is running on a very, very early version of Omeka, but I wanted to show you some screenshots from it because I thought it would give you a sense of some of the things that Omeka can do. You can see that the site opens with a video introduction. Omeka has the possibility to deal with all sorts of file types, so all sorts of images, but also multimedia. And then as we enter the exhibit, you can see the structure that I talked about in the exhibit here. It's a little bit more explicit because in this early version of Omeka, you couldn't actually name pages, and so they had to be page 1, 2, 3, and 4. But now you can name them so they don't look quite as artificial. But you can see that the exhibit has the sections listed down the left side and the pages in the sections in the top navigation. And a visitor to the Gulag site receives a prisoner at the beginning of the site and gets to trace their life through the many trials of arrest, labor, suffering, propaganda, those sorts of things. And then the content for the sections is below that. So there's some introductory content and then items from the archive. There are lots of videos and movies and interviews in this exhibit and additional just sort of digital images and documents and those sorts of things. So Omeka comes equipped with all sorts of things to help you figure out how to use it and to help your programmers figure out how to use it. The one thing that we're working the hardest on right now is documentation. There's a documentation wiki that is available for users. It's open to anyone to add to and edit and to help us fill out the documentation along the way. There are a set of, this is an older screenshot of this page, there are more of these now, video tutorials about how to use Omeka, how to install it, how to add items to the archive, how to build an exhibit, and some more complicated things. There is an open forum for folks to post questions on and talk to each other about how Omeka works. Omeka comes with sort of a core functionality that allows you to build these exhibits, but there are also a whole host of other things that you can add to Omeka to add Web 2.0 functionality, and they are located in the plugins directory. One of them, as you see here, is the geolocation plugin that allows you to plot the items in your map on in your archive on a Google map. We also have a bank of themes that you could choose from. If you're not going to design your own theme, you can start with one of ours or start with one of ours and adapt from that. Those are always changing, and we're inviting designers to add back to that bank of themes. As I said about the additional plugin functionality, here's some of the ways that you can tweak and play with Omeka. If you've got existing content management systems, it's important to you to be able to get things in and out of Omeka. We have a very simple CSV import plugin so that you can shoot something out of, if you were, God forbid, working in Past Perfect or something awful like that. you know, something fairly simple you can shoot out, or a FileMaker. Lots of people still using FileMaker, a CSV file, and then map those fields into Omeka. But we also have OAI PMH migration. We have a plugin that you can create. You can make your site an OAI PMH provider, or you can harvest from other places. Social bookmarking is coming. We are in collaboration with the Steve project to build an adaptation of the Steve plugin for Omeka sites. Tagging from the administrative end is already in place. Every kind of feed you could possibly imagine is available through adding that operator to the URL of any list. Geolocation is available. We have a user contribution form, which is one of my favorite forms. It allows you to collect images, files, stories from the public. So you can actually build an archive on top of the archive you've already got. MyOmeka is sort of not a very well-named plugin, but basically what it is it allows a user to log in favorite items and then build posters out of them. It's great for educational applications, but it's just great for people to be able to keep track of what they like in your site. The iPaper document viewer is very popular. Simple Pages is very popular. The social bookmarking, I skipped over that, talking about the Steve social tagging. The social bookmarking plugin is available and in place so that you can put a little badge on each item, send it to Facebook, Delicious, Dig, whatever you want to do with it. So I thought I'd flip through a couple of sites that use Omeka. The April 16th archive, if you remember the shooting at Virginia Tech, we had this site up to collect remembrances and photos and recollections after that shooting. Within 3 days, we designed and implemented the site, and it's been up and going strong since then. The Bracero History Archive is a collaboration between CHNM and the National Museum of American History to collect the stories of folks who were Braceros and their families. That archive has about 3,000 items in it, many of which are oral histories. The Catawba River Narratives is a site that accompanies an art exhibit in South Carolina where they wanted folks to go out and themselves take photographs of the river and bring their recollections. Gulag, which you saw, this is actually the homepage of the Gulag site. The University of Arizona's libraries have put together a couple of sites using Omeka. They're very simple, but they're very good. Photographs of Homer Shantz and a collection of Mexican documents that I don't really know what they are, but but in part because I don't read Spanish and I haven't read haven't read the narrative yet. But it's not a bad-looking site. The Memorial Stadium site at University of Minnesota, which I hope Jason will tell you a little bit more about. We were really pleased to see this go up. My PhD is from Minnesota. It made me particularly happy to see it. Lincoln at 200 is a site from the Newberry Library. It's actually two exhibits. It has a wonderful interface, and they have managed to use the Zoomify plugin with Omeka, and I'm sure any day now they're going to share that code with us so that we can make it available to the world, because I have a lot of people asking about it. The Upper Ringwald collection, we used to do a side-by-side with this collection. This is a public library in New Jersey. We used to compare their old website to their new Omekafied website, and then they robots.txt'd it, so we can't get back to it to show them the old version. So I think if you're interested in Omeka, there are several ways to get involved. One, just as a user to pay attention to the forms and the documentation. If you're a designer and a programmer, we'd love to have you contribute your themes back. And if you start to build plugins, we'd love to have them back to share with the world, too. There's a blog, so we try to keep up with the world. There's also a Google development list for the real programmers in the crowd who have hard technical questions that might not be of interest to the forums. And the code is open. The track is open. SVN is open. So if you want to play around in the code, it's there. So that's my rundown on Omeka.
Thank you. Some of you may be looking at your program and looking at me, so I should start by saying I'm not Jennifer Jones, and she was unable to come, so I'm filling in. Thank you. Thank you for coming. As Sharon said and Jason both said, it's very nice to see such a crowd at 8:30, and I hope we do you justice. I'm going to talk briefly about these three topics, why we're interested in Omeka, what we're doing with it, and what we hope to do next. I think the most important information I can pass along today is on this slide, which is why we're interested. And collaboration is probably the most important reason. We have, as I suppose most organizations do, ambitions beyond our capacity to implement. Our reach exceeds our grasp, especially in technology. There are all sorts of things we want to do, all sorts of things our audience expect increasingly as they look at other sites and see what's happening. And we simply don't have the expertise, the capacity, the resources to develop all those in-house. So we look for strong partners, and thank goodness the Center for History and New Media was interested in collaborating with us on this, because we're increasingly aware that we have content, we have some information about that content, we can apply the expertise, but how do we get it out to our audiences? And increasingly, how do we allow our audiences then to tell us what they know about that content and those collections? So we're looking at a whole variety of functions and technologies that we probably could never build on our own. And we're also looking within our organization, to be frank, at kind of a roadblock in the sense there's a whole bunch of people who want to be out on the web and have things out on the web, and a relatively small number of people in the IT department who are either the gatekeepers or the developers who can put it out on the web. So we're looking for all sorts of opportunities to get beyond those barriers, to provide the information, the understanding, the knowledge that we have to the audiences, and increasingly are looking for it on the web. So we're happy to work with the center, and we hope we can make it a continuing relationship as Omeka and as other products are developed. What we principally have been using Omeka for are introductions to disparate content. Like all of you, we have a variety of curators, professionals, professional practices that are developing content, information about our collections in silos. And so we're looking for a simple sort of front end that pulls information that was, say, created from the museum department or the museum collections, the fine arts curator, the photo curator, the manuscripts curator, the book processing people, pull that all together and arrange it around subjects or around projects so that it makes sense to our audiences, that we are developing something that is adding significance, enhancing the value of what we're ordinarily doing, and is written for an audience, written for our users, in terms that they will understand and will be able implement or use on their own, rather than just creating things that are simply a reflection of professional practice, which is a lot of what we do. And you've probably heard that from a lot of different speakers, both in this conference and in the last few conferences. We want to be able to speak the language that our researchers understand. We also want to be able to make these tools available to the curators, to the people who have that content knowledge, that subject matter expertise. And I confess there's a certain amount of resistance here, and you're always experiencing something similar when you're saying, we would like you to learn to use this particular application in addition to all the other things that you do. And that's why it's so important that it's easy, that there really isn't a tremendous learning curve. You don't have to learn about XML or HTML or Java or any of the other technologies that are being built into this application. You simply have to be able to work within the template that is created. So it makes it extraordinarily easy for a curator to lend his or her knowledge to the site. Last but not least, we want to be able to, as we develop this capacity, as we develop the ability to work with Omeka and any other type of technology, we want to be able to lend that as a service to our partners. And we have relationships with organizations all over Minnesota, of course, and increasingly throughout the region, as we try to use technology to kind of transcend all the boundaries that have separated both professions, in the sense that 10 years ago if you came to the Minnesota Historical Society and you were studying the Ojibwe in Minnesota, you could go down to one level in the building and talk to the museum collections people and learn a language and a metadata scheme and probably an application that was carrying the catalog, go to another level and talk to the archivist, go to yet another level and find somebody who is in the press, and at each point you'd have to learn about the profession, as much about the profession as the subject. So we're using, in one sense, technology to cross over the boundaries between professions and unite those that collection, or that subject. We're also using technology to transcend the boundaries between institutions, because institutions scattered all over the Midwest, for example, have information that's related, that's been arbitrarily separated, that's been pulled apart over the years through some accident of collecting and history. We want to be able to pull those back together to transcend those institutional boundaries, and last but not least, the geographic boundaries, because we certainly are aware of the fact that though we're a state historical society, the Minnesota Historical Society, the history that most of our researchers are interested in is not encapsulated in a relatively arbitrary political and geographic boundary. So be able to use technology to transcend all those boundaries. And Omeka gives us a relatively straightforward and easy way to start to do that. So what we're doing, I'm just going to walk you through some screenshots of some specific projects we have used Omeka for in the past year or so. And then I hope if you have any questions, you just feel free to interrupt. I wasn't quite confident about going live, given the vagaries of Wi-Fi. And as you can see, the slightly Rube Goldberg-esque contraption we've managed to get up and running. So we could give it a shot if you wanted to see it, but we do have just the screenshots to start. So interestingly enough, our education department was one of the first programs, I shouldn't say interestingly enough, the education department, surprisingly to me, because we don't always get along, the education department leaped on this as a tool that the staff there was interested in, because one of the complaints they had, of course, is that, you know, they're working with a specific audience, very often History Day students or K-12 teachers, who would look at our site and quite frankly be baffled. You know, where can I find what I want to find? And it could be anything from a photograph, it could be a manuscript, it could be whatever you'd like to say. So Omeka was one of the first examples of a program outside of my division that was very much interested, this is an example of one of the first programs in the organization that used Omeka to start lending some context to what we had, to making it useful for a particular audience. And as you can see, we have all sorts of disparate content. Everything from our most famous recent governor to a whole variety of other things. And they're using browse by resource, browse by types of resources, and a timeline to kind of, as I said, knit these things together so that it would make sense within the K-12 framework, usually within the history standards that I'm sure your state has, just as we do. So I think that's a good example of how a program can take advantage of this. We also used Omeka then, and we have one curator who's turned out to be quite handy with it all, to as a way of introduction to all the different types of geographic information system, geographic information that we had available. And part of it is just an introduction to the map collections. And part of it is an introduction to a recent acquisition, a globe we bought to kind of fill out our collection. Part of it is an introduction to a database, essentially a particular resource that has metadata and, to a certain extent, a lot of the images of the maps and plats themselves. And then some other things that, quite frankly, were kind of outside the normal framework of what we presented. Some podcasts that we've done. We work with the Minnesota Association of Geographic Educators, a partner. I'm sorry.
I can interrupt you with questions. I'll get you.
Sure.
On the last slide, you had something with a timeline.
Yeah.
Is that, down in the right-hand corner, is that a plug-in to Omeka?
It's dippity, we can't.
Right. It's not actually a plug-in to Omeka, but there's a way to use the dippity structure itself and then port that into Omeka. There is someone who is at work on adapting the simile timeline from MIT to work with Omeka.
Yeah, so basically there's a lot of things that really aren't in Omeka per se, but are available through Omeka, and we'll see some of that in a second. Actually, I should point out our contact from the IMLS, who helped us work with this project, is here today. But a web-based GIS tool that we developed for K-12, True North, which is hosted actually on the Land Management Information Center, which is a state agency in Minnesota, and we wanted to be able to pull that together with all our other geographic resources. And this is a project that basically takes advantage of the fact that there's an enormous amount of GIS content out there, and we just wanted to pull it together. So we built a relatively simple, but actually it has quite sophisticated functions, web-based GIS tool, so no one really has to understand ArcView or a great deal about GIS. They simply can use this to pull together and layer together a whole variety of information that has a geographic identifier and use it primarily for K-12 audiences. And then finally, how Minnesota places were named is essentially an ebook. Minnesota Place Names was published many decades ago, and then we adapted it for the web. So Minnesota on the map is one example of pulling together content from a whole variety of sources, located in a whole variety of places, and then presented to an audience that is interested in geography. This is an example of the link. Essentially, if you go into Minnesota, go into the plats and atlases, you'll get to yet a site that is not in Omeka, but this, as I said, we're just using Omeka as the introduction to content that's scattered around, and would be hard for someone, frankly, to find and knit together without that introductory page from Omeka. We just took advantage of the ability to develop a collection within Omeka and loaded it with 60 of our more interesting maps. In fact, these are all maps and images that were put up on an exhibition at the History Center in St. Paul, and so we made them available for closer study to anyone who's more interested through Omeka. One of the most recent projects we've done with Omeka is the Hill Family Collections. Through an interesting set of circumstances a couple of years ago, we acquired about 1,600 cubic feet of records from the James J. Hill family. And James J. Hill was a railroad baron, sometimes, don't quote me, well, I guess I am being quoted, robber baron from the 19th and 20th century, and famous for developing the Great Northern, railroad, transcontinental railroad across the northern part of the United States. He was also, and his family, the next generations behind him, or following him, were also involved in just about every aspect of the economy of Minnesota and the Northwest. So banking, railroad, land development, you name it. And then along with that, virtually every kind of philanthropic activity you can imagine as well. So the information is not by any means just about the family. Of course, there is a lot about the family, and many times I think I now know more about the Hill family than I do my own. But just about any topic that you're interested in Minnesota from the late 19th and early 20th century is in some way mentioned or encompassed in this collection, and it's big. So how do we take advantage of Omeka? Well, as you can see, we developed a little introductory page that mentions here's the collection in general, and then for the People magazine version of it is just learn about the Hill family itself, because it's a very interesting collection. And then what we developed is if you hit the collections link, then what we've done is basically provide access, not using Omeka as anything more than introduction, to all the different things that we have developed as we've processed the collection. So if you run across this file set, you will be able to go to learning more about just getting to the library and how to use the material. you'll be linked to a whole variety of EAD encoded finding aids. This is around, well, I don't even want to go into this. A whole set, a rather large set of photographs, thousands of photographs that came along with the collection that we have digitized and made available through our photograph database online. Information about specific artifacts, which there quite frankly weren't quite a lot of them, and then related collections. Because among the other glories of the collections at the Historical Society, we have about 13,000 cubic feet of railroad records. And if you want to be able to go from the Hill family to the Great Northern Collection, should be able to compare and contrast those. And then other resources, of course, because there's always something else. So this is a link to the finding aids. And the other point of access to the finding aids, frankly, is through our catalog. So you'd have to be able to start searching under James J. Hill, related resources to James J. Hill. And that is effective. I mean, you can do that. But as I said, it's nice to have a sort of introductory page that sort of pulls it all together for you. I'm interested in James J. Hill, and I'm interested in railroads. Go to the site, and virtually every resource we have is referenced. What am I doing for time? Photographs, this is a sampling. You can also, as I said, go directly to our photograph database to search for the entire collection, but then we used the ability to create a smaller collection, Omeka, that Sharon described, to pull together some of the more interesting photographs just to get a sample of what's out there, so we can foreground some of the resources of the collection. Those are kind of examples of what we're doing. And I guess I should just say that in degree of difficulty, it really is pretty much what we had hoped. There's a certain amount of work that has to be done on the IT side. In our case, our IT staff had not set up a Linux server, so we had to learn that. But once we did, it was relatively straightforward. And we set up a few templates. As Sharon said, it's relatively easy to adapt those, put our brand onto the Omeka pages. And then once that is done, our curators have been relatively quick. Well, some of the curators have been relatively quick to adapt this. And we're seeing now ideas kind of bubbling up from them rather than sort of my saying, use this or else. So I think it's definitely successful within that framework. I think it really has fulfilled our expectations. What we're looking for next, and we are in contact with the center about the things to come and how we can continue to enhance the tool. Principally, these are related to what we would like to do with our partners in the region. We had hoped to be able to allow smaller local and county historical societies access to our Omeka installation in order to develop their pages. And what we found, frankly, is that in the current version, there's some issues that make it a little hard for that to work simply. So we are lending our support to round two, the Omeka Commons concept, which would be, I probably should have let you, undoubtedly should let you explain this, but it is basically an approach that would make it possible in a much more straightforward and simpler way to do exactly that, to allow partners, repositories with information and expertise, but less technological capacity than perhaps we have to use Omeka in a straightforward manner. So maybe you can mention something about that, Sharon.
Yeah, certainly. I should have mentioned this in my presentation. One of the things that is there are two things hopefully coming for Omeka. One of the things that is definitely coming is that by the new year, folks who don't have access to Linux hosting of their own will be able to go to omeka.net and sign up for a hosted account. And it'll be sort of a sliding price scale based on storage size. So initially it'll be free, but if you got a lot of stuff, eventually we have to charge you a little bit for server space. We're hoping for January. Yes, and there are lots of people waiting on it. And then the second piece is that we have a grant proposal in to hopefully develop what we're calling Omeka Commons, and that would be to allow every user who has an Omeka account the ability to contribute their material to a commons. That would allow it to be preserved at the Internet Archive. So it will provide a digital preservation strategy, at least one, for small folks who don't have a strategy for institutional repository or those sorts of things. And then to make their material centrally available at Omeka Commons so that individuals out in the world can go to one central location and be able to search across all of the Omeka material that's available in the world. And then just like YouTube, you would have an Omeka Commons basically channel page that would push users back to your own institutional site.
Which I think is wonderful because, as I said, I mean, we're hoping that, this all, these new advances will allow us to more easily develop the capacity to be a host for regional repositories. And then I think the Omeka Commons idea is quite frankly brilliant because, I mean, you know, that the idea that we will be able to start providing a repository for client-developed collections, essentially. And there are quite some very interesting examples of how that's been developing so far. But my experience with those has been that it's relatively difficult to manage the content. So having this sort of standard available, standard repository, and a standard set of tools for description, for in all senses, would be really remarkable. So we see a lot of possibilities there, and we very much hope to continue to work with them. So do center on that. The other aspect related to that is Sharon mentioned Past Perfect, and an extraordinary number of local and county historical societies in Minnesota, and I suppose everywhere, use Past Perfect as their kind of content management system, and for a whole variety of tools and functions within their organizations. And what we have found is if we have tried to get access to that content, if it's just the descriptive content of a catalog or even photos and et cetera, is that Past Perfect doesn't really make it easy to get in and out of there. What we've sort of explored and what we're still sort of exploring but we expect will work is that Omeka then become kind of a halfway house to rehabilitate that content. make it easier for us to get at it, frankly. So that's something we're working on, and we hope that expect that that will work out as well. One other thing I should mention is that one problem we did run into is that it is a little image-oriented, so we're hoping it becomes a little more text-friendly as we go forward. And then, of course, we're expecting a whole variety of new tools and functionality as people develop plugins. And it is reflecting, I think, an extraordinarily strong development base. You know, I mentioned that I think the center is a very strong partner. It has an institutional support that's going to mean that this is going to be around for a while, and it's going to be supported and continue to develop. And a whole variety of other people, of course, can contribute to that because of the collaborative nature of the center. And as I think the popularity of the tool, just as Zotero has become quite popular, as the popularity of the tool continues to develop. So we are looking for something even better than what we have now, and fully expect that this will just simply continue to improve as more and more people take advantage of it, more and more institutions adopt it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. If you're like me and your question or comment comes to you sometime tonight or tomorrow, feel free to email me, and I would be happy to respond. Thank you. Oh, yes. Well, I have to say we frankly encourage people to use Past Perfect because, you know, in terms of its cost and its functionality, I don't know of a better product for a lot of smaller institutions, frankly. I'd be happy to learn about one. But for why people buy it, and I think there's probably about 80 or 90 users in Minnesota alone, for why they buy it, it's great. I mean, it pulls together a whole variety of functions that a small repository needs to do, and widely supported. If they belong to AASLH, they get a break on it. And so, I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think in terms of how'd you say, the world's changed a little bit since PathPerfect was first invented, and it doesn't seem as if the developers of PathPerfect are quite so interested in exposing the content. So you've got an enormous amount of information that's locked up into it, and as we looked for a variety of ways to get the content out or to make it accessible on the web or to harvest it or spider it, we just found that, you know, there just was no easy way to do it. So thinking of the using Omeka as a halfway house, to belabor that metaphor, it just seemed the simplest and cheapest way to get access to the content. So I think, you know, it may sound like a jury-rigged solution, but it's pretty simple, and simplicity has a real elegance. So I don't think this is a bad thing. And I certainly wouldn't discourage any of our local and county historical sites from using PathPerfect until I knew of something a lot better. I don't know your situation, but they're happy with it.
That's sort of exactly where I am.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to both the speakers. We'd like to open it up at this time for questions. Sadly, they are going to repeat your questions despite the size of this room, so bear with them for audio.
Right. The question is how well does Omeka play with Content DM? It's a good question. I think that we do now sort of have a feature comparison sheet for that's on the documentation that compares Omeka, well, provides some of the answers to those questions about how it plays with others. I don't know that there's not a particularly great answer to that because of the way that Content DM exposes its data. And so if you can get, you know, Content DM to expose OAI, then you can, you know, harvest it directly into Omeka. If not, you know, that's sort of, there's the high-end exchange between OAI, and then there's the sort of more pedestrian exchange using CSV. But there's not anything that looks like a REST API where there would be automatic update between the two or anything like that. Does that help? Okay. I mean, I think, you know, yeah. I mean, as Bob said about PathPerfect, I think that the answer to all of these things is that Omeka is a better web publishing front for lots and lots of collections and content management systems. And it's not in any way meant to replace those collections management systems.
In the back?
Right, and there's a Dropbox plugin. So basically, you need to use the CSV plugin with the Dropbox plugin. You import the metadata to the using the CSV plugin, put all the images and/or files in the Dropbox repository on the server, and then check them off, hand connect them.
Back there. You know,
maybe that's a better question.
Bob spoke a little bit about it, but I want to talk it from a lamp shop that we were already invested. So it's one thing to learn about how to build a lamp stack, and another to say we're at the University of Minnesota, we have a lot of experience. The answer was a half day of an install for it to get up and running with the basic, with having already experience and programmers and web developers to build the process was a half day, which was literally shocking to me when he came back and said he's done, and my disbelief, because I had been in contact with the Minnesota Historical Society and some of the difficulty that they were going through just sort of getting there, and really it was the knowledge of LAMP, not the problem with Omeka, and so it really worked out well for us.
And I would concur. I mean, if you're already running a Linux-based server, it, it's really no problem at all. In our case, I think a lot of the damage was self-inflicted. It was like, well, why do we have to do this? When are we going to do this? And, you know, on whose authority? But so I think the sequence was a bit protracted and frustrating, solely because the request to do something different. I think if you have a more comfortable relationship with your IT department, it would probably be much more like Jason's experience.
And what about getting the curators up?
Oh, well, that... Yeah, that's also, there's a certain amount of personality to it. About three kind of super users at this point who took to it like, you know, ducks to water. I mean, it really wasn't any problem at all. It was stuff they wanted to do, you know, so giving them the tool was more or less just like setting them loose. And in other cases, you realize that, you know, it's not really what they want to do. It's just kind of a reflection of the fact that people have different interests and different temperaments. So you're never going to find something that everybody loves. But the people who want to be able to provide access to this sort of material in this sort of way use it very quickly. I think the only sort of issue here is that because it's an open source product and because other people are using it and because it's going to be under a continual development, frankly, that you have to find somebody who's interested in just sort of keeping up with it. And so we have a user group within the society that meets and shares information, and so not everybody has to follow the wiki, the blog, etc. And that works very effectively. So I think if you can develop that kind of little sort of a set of colleagues who share information routinely, and it doesn't have to be within an institution, but just, you know, feel comfortable talking to each other, and then also someone who is then comfortable enough to feel, you know, to contact the people at the center who are extremely helpful, you don't have much of a learning curve at all.
On the issue of learning to use and work with Omeka, I think as Jason might suggest, and probably Bob too, that there are some server configuration things. I think the thing that folks seem to have the biggest hitch on is running Image Magic for some
the image magic
the right way,
and working with your OIT to open up enough space to upload the file upload side. So our workaround a lot is to use the Dropbox, mm-hmm. which gets us essentially through the back door, especially when we're dealing with larger master files that we then want Image Magic to create the derivatives for Omeka, and that was the
right.
Our biggest step.
So when you upload a file to Omeka, it creates a web view version and two thumbnails, a square thumbnail and a rectangular thumbnail. And Omeka, Image Magic is the program that does that. And so sometimes that gives people a little bit of a hitch. If you're in the D.C. area, we have been running a series of free day-long workshops that we call play dates. Basically show up with your packed lunch, and you get shuttled off into the end-user room or the developer room and spend a day with the Omeka staff learning about Omeka and how it works. And we have done some of those at various sort of half-day workshops at various meetings, and we're certainly interested in continuing to do that. And so maybe we'll see if we can run a workshop here next year.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, we did about a year ago have Sharon come up with one of our colleagues to do a half-day workshop. And
sold Jason, me on it, quite Jason, honestly. Yeah,
Jason,
you know,
built his first site that morning. So it's quick and easy, and I think the workshop idea is a very good way to get started.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's the other thing, is that on the Omeka site itself, there is an open sandbox installation where you can just log in as a guest user and play around. So you can see what it looks like from the inside without installing it. The first question was, do we plan to provide a plugin that will reduce the data entry on the item side? Somebody could build that if they were interested. We're not interested in reducing the number of fields that are exposed, because part of our mission is to convince curators, particularly museum curators, that they need to care about standardized metadata. That they need to know what Dublin Core is and why it matters and why we need to expose as much of this data as we can so that these collections can play nicely with one another. So it's not on our list, but it might be on somebody else's.
And from a practical approach, we just ignore a lot of it. because we're using it, I mean, quite honestly, we're using it as a web-facing tool. We've got that metadata stored on our collection. Yeah. So what we're saying is, which of these 50-some-odd crazy fields that we keep does the public really care about? Well, then that's all we load, because we're not preserving metadata in Omeka. What we're doing is sharing data in Omeka for public viewing. So we're able to rapidly ramp this up rather than recataloging everything to that same extent that we would on a collection management system.
And in answer to the second question, we've done a little bit of both. We did a sort of extensive customization at first because we are brand oriented. Right? And then we kind of realized it didn't have to be that difficult. So we're now hoping to use more of the basic templates.
And Memorial Stadium is very bare bones using an existing template, and in fact, purposely using an existing template to say, we don't want IT to invest a lot of time on either creating Omeka on the LAMP stack or having to fiddle with it. The investment of time needs to be on the content managers, the curators, to put the stuff in. The stuff is what needs to drive it. And the more we can distance this from our limited resources in IT, in a sense, the better. So we tried to keep it very simple. And I was told by one of our PHP programmers to thank Sharon and the staff over there that it is very easy to do little tweaks if you know a little bit of PHP in there, that it's very clean code that they're very happy to play with.
Yeah, because our developers are not developers by training, they're historians by training, there's a huge list of very normally named functions. I mean, the functions are called what they do, and there's a whole list of them, and they're very easy to use. And if I can use them, you can use them.
Yeah, in the back.
We're just starting to use Omeka, but we do have a number of online something we need to be aware of.
That's interesting. We the Gulag is run. Gulag is running on, I think, 0.91. So that's really old. We're now at the stable 0.1. And so we have not gone back and updated Gulag because it was a grant-funded project and we just don't have the money and the time to do it. But as far as I know, from 1.0 until we get to another full number version, the exhibit builders, all that stuff's backwards compatible. So if you do want to go back and tweak the stuff that you've got, you should be able to access the exhibits that you've created in an earlier version. I think it's going to be a really, 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 really long time until we get to Omeka 2.0.
I will say that you brought up a very good point, though, in dealing with an open source product that has a core set of developers sitting at the center of history and new media, and then asking for a larger number of community developers to be out there building the plugins. And that is, when core moves up to 1.0, how soon can we expect the plugins? And I give you an example, as mm-hmm. devil's advocate, is that we were running 0.1 at the mm-hmm. time for our development and had our social bookmark tag in there. We upgrade to 1 to go to production, saying, it's a perfect time to let's do it. No longer do we have that feature because we're not waiting on you. What we're waiting on is this community. And so what we're really interested in beyond Omeka is the community of core committed developers outside of where you're sitting to bring those up. So where do the plugins rise to that level? And,
right.
on my
list. In that case, you are waiting on us because because we are committed to upgrading the plugins that we built. But we're not upgrading other people's. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm pretty sure that the iPaper plugin has not made the jump yet to the stable 1.0.
It has.
It has?
It's good. That's
good.
Memorial Stadium.
Yay.
And it works because it goes out to a third party, which is very nice.
Great.
Yeah.
I would second what Jason said, that it is a very important comment. I think it's unfortunately a fact of life. I mean, virtually everything we do now has some aspect of that concern. So, it's really sort of a risk mitigation factor. Do you want to be on the bleeding edge, leading edge, behind the edge? So I just don't think it's going to be an unusual situation. We really have to understand what we've invested in and what we conceivably could lose along the way.
Students used it to produce final projects in courses?
There have. I have not. The question is whether or not Omeka has been used as a teaching tool. I actually didn't bring their whole host of them. We've been really pleased with the way that university faculty has picked up Omeka and used it in the classroom. My students use it. Lots of public history courses use it to create sort of culminating end of term kinds of projects. And there's a great project called Digital Worcester where there's an entire generation of American Studies students who are creating, collaboratively building an archive and building exhibits out of that archive. There's another project like that in Cleveland. So, yep, lots of them.
We've got time for maybe one more question, so no pressure on that person. Yeah.
Both of you said that you wish that it was more time.
What are you looking for?
Well, actually, you put me in a rough spot because I'm parroting what my colleagues told me to mention here, and I think what they were saying is that if they're writing some text in say Word, and then copy and paste, you run into all sorts of problems. So that what they found is it's easiest to use ASCII text, and then you lose some control, etc. So that's essentially. The problems they've encountered. It also reflects a kind of wordiness on our side. You know, we like put a lot of information there. But that's essentially is it. If text information created in one format doesn't necessarily translate so easily right into Omeka, whereas opposed to an image, you just drag and drop.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That the text editor that is in the text fields in Omeka, that the embedded formatting in Word sometimes conflicts with the tiny MCE, M-I-C-E, mice, whatever it stands for, the way that little text editor marks up the text. It's not a huge problem, but it is sometimes you have to convince people to write in other places.
It's a surprise the first time it happens.
Yeah.
All right. Now that you've all converted to Omeka, you've drank the Kool-Aid, I believe there are stickers on the back.
There are stickers and bookmarks on the back.
So,
I don't know
into
if
all
there
your
are
books,
any left.
Onto your computers,
I have
onto
a few
your
more
bags.
Stickers.
Share it. And one last round of applause for our speakers.